My name's Chris Kirk, and this is TW Talks, the interviews podcast from 3 Weeks Edinburgh. I'm sitting in the Assembly Club bar. We're at the heart of the Edinburgh Fringe. It's happening all around us, and we're talking to some of our favourite Fringe performers who have shows at this year's festival. Today, Gareth Much, whose show Gareth Much Means Well, is off at the stand at this year's festival. Let's get TW Talking to Gareth. So I am still sitting here in the Assembly Club bar. My next guest has joined me. Gareth Much is here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. Very excited.
We are, as we record this, 1 week in, officially,
yes.
To this year's Fringe.
Yesterday was my 7th show, so yes, one week in.
And yesterday was the lull Wednesday.
For most,
I
was worried about it going in because, as you say, it's the lull Wednesday after the 2-for-1s, the first weekend. Always takes a dip.
But you were the one.
Hey, maybe they all just flocked to the stand for an early afternoon show. No, I loved it yesterday. I really, really enjoyed yesterday.
So, past, present and future, we are going to talk about this year's show.
Yes.
That's kind of why we're here. But before we get there, let's go on your journey in comedy.
Okay.
So if you had to pick a moment when that journey begins, where are we starting this journey?
I think we are starting this journey in what was once referred to as West Lothian Youth Theatre.
West Lothian Youth Theatre.
Now named Firefly Arts.
Oh, they've got a
rebranded.
Cooler name.
And yeah, I think it was that. I'd always just been a bit of a, like, I'm an only child, so I was always performing for mama and papa, and I was always like wanting to put on little shows and make them watch. And then one day my dad just saw this flyer for this thing called Playing a Week. And he was like, well, that sounds perfect. One gets him at that. Someone else can watch this bloody performance. So I did that and I remember again, like I'd done like little bits of sport. I was in like a football and rugby and little bits here and there. But I was always kind of like on the outside of things, kind of involved, but not really sort of guy. And I remember my dad sitting me down going, no, you're probably not going to be the lead or whatever, like, but you know, you're
managing your expectations.
Yeah, you're entering this world.
Yeah.
I was the lead, had like the most line made to this day.
So this
many
play, or is this musical theatre?
This is a play.
Play.
Yeah. I kept going with the youth theatre. I joined and was there for years and I absolutely adored it. But I think that's what set me down the path of I want to perform.
And how young are we talking with this first play in a week?
First play in a week, I'd probably would have been about 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. 12 or 13, yeah. Young.
So you carried on doing the plays, the theatre, acting.
Went to college to pursue acting. Like, I thought acting was going to be the thing.
So you went to study drama, theatre?
Yes. At Telford, the Performing Arts Studio of Scotland. Karen Gillan went there. They're very proud of that. so I went there.
And the plan then, you were thinking, was this comedy acting or your proper?
I think
it's wrong for me to say that non-comedy acting is proper acting.
No, you're quite right, Chris. I think it was initially I was kind of typecast. Again, ridiculous for me to say like I'm fucking Dwayne Johnson getting typecast. those were the first few roles I was doing, but I then ventured into more, well, I want to be a serious actor taking on a thespian. But I remember I'd started doing stand-up because I went to the Fringe with my dad when I was maybe about 15.
Yeah.
And I saw...
Because you're sort of local.
Yes, I'm just outside Livingston. It's right on the doorstep, really. And I saw Rod Gilbert with my dad because my dad's Welsh and he was always seeing like the new Welsh thing at that time. And Rod was just popping off. So he was like, we need to go see this guy. And I just completely fell in love with him and the art form in general. So then I started doing stand-up when I was maybe about 16, 17. And then that was kind of running alongside the acting dream. And then there was one year, my second year in college, my lecturer had seen me do stand-up. And they had like a little rule, I think for other actors, it makes sense to me for acting. We don't want you acting in any other productions. You can only act for us.
Oh, an exclusivity clause.
Yes, but he saw me do stand-up and he just decided to lump that in with it, going, so you can't keep doing this thing, so you need to pick now. It's us or the stand-up.
Oh, wow. So it's,
and I went, stand-up. So I left college and then just pursued stand-up from that point ever since. So that's probably maybe about 18 years old.
So those early stand-up routines, were you open mic nighting it? Were you finding guest spots?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The dingiest basements in pubs across Scotland.
So Edinburgh, Glasgow and beyond.
Oh, way beyond. Largs. Like places like 3 hours north of Aberdeen. Like, yeah, proper.
So a lot of travelling for sometimes, I assume, in the early days, quite short moments on stage.
Yes, and no money.
Yeah.
But yes, I think that's kind of also where I caught the bug. And I say to younger comics still now, enjoy these bits because these kind of are the fun bits. Like when you're all coming up together and you all get excited for like, oh my God, this gig pays and it's £20.
Like, it only costs £200 to get.
Yeah, exactly. But you're all so excited by the idea of this thing. When you're in it and you've been doing it for years, I always yearn back to, it's like when you're in school and you're a kid, you always just dream about, oh, once I'm 18 and I'm an adult, life will be great.
Yeah.
And you kind of sometimes miss, no, you want to be a kid.
Yeah.
Be the kid, enjoy these days. So it's kind of similar to that, I think. So I do. I miss the early cutting your teeth sort of days.
So when you're doing those early slots, while you were still doing the acting in college, was it immediately obvious to you the kind of stand-up you were going to perform?
Yes. Excellent question. And it still is exactly what I'm doing and ties in quite nicely to this year's show. I've done pretty much the same sort of type of stand-up from day dot. I used to, up until maybe I was about 14, 15 years old, I wet the bed. And that was something that, if anyone knew that, that was for me and me only. I'm taking that to the grave. And then fuck knows why. But when I was doing stand-up for the first time, I wrote this whole routine about the nappies that I wore.
Desperately tried to keep secret.
Yes.
Suddenly with your routine.
I had an alarm and I released this sort of like what most people would be like for like holding on to. The first gig at the stand, I talked about that. I had a whole 5 minute piece on that, and people laughed and they were coming up to me going, oh, I'm pissed a bit, tell us that, or all my kids.
Yeah.
And at like 17, I remember going, oh, this, I think this is going to be your avenue. The personal tales of woe.
Yeah.
Like anything that most people would be holding on to is all the embarrassing stories that I'm releasing on stage.
So your dad brought you into the Fringe mid-teens to see Rod Gilbert.
He did.
Did you then start coming to the festival regularly, given it was on your door?
Fell in love with it.
You happened to grow up near the biggest comedy festival in the world.
Yes. No, I'm immensely grateful that my mum and dad took me to the Fringe a lot and like watching street performers and everything, because no other kid in my school went to the Fringe. It was that I was like, this is mad. There's like, maybe you have to see this.
Yeah.
There's like a whole world. And it's 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? Everyone's asleep at the wheel here. So I'm so grateful that my mom and dad did have the, when I was really young, were like, took me to see like Harry Potter, like improv shows and all sort. And like, yeah, just, I would spend hours at the Royal Mile just watching all of the street performances. There was one guy called Mr. Spin. I still think of him. Like, yeah, so they very much ingratiated me with the Fringe early. So it's really them to blame.
They can't complain.
No, they can't.
So your college gave you this ultimatum.
Yes.
You picked comedy.
I did.
And then how did you then, okay, now this has got to work. This is what you're doing.
It really does.
How did you then progress from there?
I would say the main reason and sort of backing and confidence that I had to pursue it and got better at it was through the Stand Comedy Club. They were very, very supportive and they really do champion up-and-coming acts.
So I guess, obviously, anyone at the Fringe knows the Stand, but people who are not at the Fringe, this is the year-round comedy venue. There are now more, but there was a time when it was the year-round comedy
100%,
venue.
100%, yes. So I think it's really all down to them, really. I think I kind of cut my teeth there. I got better there. I made friends there.
And when you sort of then get the slots were getting longer as you progress.
Yes, 100%. And that used to take longer. That is something that I'm very much noticing now. There are people that I've seen have, don't get me wrong, good, but like 2 or 3 good 5 or 10 minutes and it's 15s on weekends. Yeah. And I'm like, That took me 3 years. Like, you really had to earn it. They were like, right, you do fives here, then we'll give you tens on a Sunday, maybe. And then you'll do the Sundays for a year.
Yeah.
You have to nail them for a year. Then we'll give you 15s on a Sundays, and we might give you a Thursday, another year. And then you would be invited back to 10 minutes, but now on a Friday, Saturday. It was a much longer process, but a process that I, from seeing where it is now, still stand by as better, because when you are then given these moments, you are ready. Like, there's no doubt that you can meet it.
Yeah. And I guess by doing those stand shows, the upside is this is a real comedy audience.
Mm.
I guess the downside is this is a real comedy audience.
Yes, well, exactly.
So they are quite demanding.
Yeah, and the stakes are higher, because when you're in a gig in Glasgow or Kirkintilloch or wherever you are, like, that might, you might not work for that promoter again. This promoter might just be doing a pop-up. He's paying you like £30, you're doing 10 minutes. If that one goes wrong, you're like, well, he's not running another gig for another 9 months. Like, the stakes are low. Whereas, as you say, this is the beacon, the year-round, at the time, hub of comedy. You want to be in there. So, like, the stakes are higher. So you feel like one bad show and you're like, have I just compromised everything? But, you know, stakes are a privilege. That's not quite the quote.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So let's bring it back to the Fringe. So obviously you're coming to the Fringe because you're local, although, as you say, it is mad. Maybe it's slightly better now than you.
I hope so. I really do.
And the Fringe has tried to do more outreach.
Yeah.
But I guess in terms of you performing at the Fringe, when was, presumably the minute you decided comedy's my thing,
mm-hmm.
given you live here,
yeah.
it was like, and therefore the Fringe is going to be a big
I have done some sort of show at the Fringe every year, bar the COVID years where it was illegal for me to do so. I've done a show at the Fringe every year since 2012.
Yeah.
In some capacity. Not, I started doing hours, I think, in 2017 or 2018. But yeah, mixed bills, compilation shows with friends like Robin Granger, Gareth Waugh. Like, yeah, I've done something at the Fringe since 2012, yeah.
So if we go for that first year doing the full hour.
Yeah.
Because I guess for certainly comedians for whom the Fringe is a big part of their life,
yeah.
that first 1 hour of the Fringe is quite a big moment.
Massive. Yeah.
And had you done a 1 hour show prior to that, or was that your first time?
No, I had not. I had done one preview. So the show was called, this is a funny story, it arrogantly says before, that's never a good start. This is a funny story. It falls flat. So the show was called, because my name's Gareth Much, it was called Much Ado About Nothing, which I thought was, and also there wasn't really a theme, so nothing fits.
Yeah.
And there was some guy that was running a string of previews in a cafe in Dunfermline, which doesn't scream comedy right off the bat. But I was speaking to all the other comedians that were doing it, and they were all really worried about numbers. They were like, oh, I've only got two in. I remember the late, great legends, icon, hero, Vladimir Tavish, Paul Sneddon, was like, oh, I'm only on four. This is fucking tough. And then I phoned the promoter, and he was like, oh, you've sold out. And I remember being like, what am I at this point? Maybe like 21 or something, being like, Much, he's got some fans in Dunfermline. So I turn up. And yeah, it's busy. It's random. There's maybe about 80 people there. But I'm looking at them.
These are Shakespeare fans. Is this going to be a conclusion?
they were all so old. And I was like, this can't be my demographic. And then it clicked. They'd all bought a ticket thinking I was doing like a one-man Shakespeare play. So I did the hour. The occasional passive-aggressive heckle. I remember one woman went, we got a bus from Lithgow for this. And then right at the end, just one old guy walked past me and he was just chuckling away. And I went, oh, thank you for coming. And he went, oh, I cannot believe he did the whole hour. And then just went into the Dunfermline afternoon. So that was my first ever time doing an hour. And that was maybe about 2 weeks before
the Fringe was starting.
And it did not fill me with confidence.
Did you add not Shakespeare show?
I should have, because the poster was me in a ruff and everything. It looked like a Shakespeare show. I should have done that, but I didn't.
So that was 2016, 2017?
Yeah, in and around there, yeah.
And from that point onwards, was it like, okay, I am now in the new hour every year part of my career?
100%, yes. And that is not easy. I learned that also very quickly, because you build up all this material for like the first sort of like 10 years. So that first hour is just your favorite and best bits of those 10 years. And then the next year, you have a year to build up a whole new... What? Yeah. That's insane. What are we talking about? But just the more you do it, the more kind of adept you get at it. I don't know. It's so weird. I stress about it every year. I fret every year. I look at the garbage that I think's in the book. But then somehow, you know, you do a bunch of previews, you work really hard on it, and... So far, and I think this is hour six, I haven't felt like I've come to Edinburgh underprepared, and I've always had a lot of fun.
Do you feel, as basically a local, that gives you a massive advantage? I mean, I guess it does in terms of cost and logistics.
Yes.
You're already here.
Yeah.
But then I guess you have a bit of a year-round audience, but suddenly you have 1,000 other people trying to get...
Yeah, and you know what? I also think as well, like, there are people that see the local guys and year-round, and then all these exciting new people come in. I would be the same. I'd be like, oh, I see this guy all the time.
Oh, I can see you in October.
Yes, 100%. So I do get it, but again, as I've built up over the sixth year now, this year especially, I think there's been every day so far, there has been people coming up to me going, oh, I remember seeing you at the Rose Theatre up in the attic at Gilda Balloon. And so, like, people have been coming. Like, some guy was like, I've been seeing you for 8 years. Like, it's really nice. But it is, that is probably the reason why I decide to do it every year, is because my friends from down south who speak at length about how much they want to do Edinburgh, but they just can't every year because their costs are crazy. And I'm sitting 15 minutes on a train away. Going, I really wish I could take a year off here. But it feels insulting to be that close to it and not use it every year.
Yeah.
When I know there are people who would rip their arm off to have that situation. Yeah. So that's, I feel pressure in that respect to do it every year.
So let's talk about this year's show.
Yes.
The man is the name.
Means well. Gareth Watch means well.
And... Is theme,
the theme,
narrative,
the theme,
gimmick.
The theme, very loosely, is about good intentions gone wrong. And it's about, I try so hard to fit in with different groups and different dynamics, and my intentions are always pure, but I don't know why or how, but they always go so awry and they get away from me. So the pitch I've been saying is, if you're the sort of person, which I think is everyone, who has one or two little memories in their memory box that will wake them up at like 1 a.m, ah, well, why did I say that then to that girl? Oh, you idiot. This is the show for you. It's 50 minutes of, and I think there's a nice little uplifting end as well that kind of hopefully encourages the audience to let go of them. We all have them. Life's too short and it's so shit and everything's terrifying in the world right now. The one thing we can do is unshackle ourselves from the burden of giving these embarrassing stories we have power. Tell your friends. I guarantee it makes them laugh. So that's loosely the theme.
You mentioned with the hour, that second hour, I thought, oh my God, now I've got a blank page to start. I mean, I guess now you've been doing it a lot of years. To what extent actually are you building material because you're gigging throughout the year? It's like, actually, I can pull that in and pull that in. Or are you a blank sheet of paper again?
Blank. It is always blank sheet of paper. And I got that sort of mentality from when I opened on tour for Tom Stade for two or three years. And Tom has been prolific at that for maybe about 16 years now or something crazy. But he kind of drilled that into me, and also he kind of drilled it in for even in like circuit gigs. Like if I'm going down to like the Comedy Store last year and I have this really good 20 minutes, if I'm booked in for the Comedy Store the next October and I'm there with a new 20 minutes that's even better than the last 20, when there's not many, some, but there's not many people that are
the audience,
churning over even club sets as well as ours. So he kind of drilled that into me of going, this is what you got to be. You got to be prolific. So it's terrifying. I wish we were still in the 80s and we could do...
The same like, 20 minutes for 20 years.
Yes. Oh, my God. That would be significantly better.
Once you've done the new hour each August, do you then take slices of it and put it into your club sets? Or
Every time. Yeah, that's the goal. So you write... And this year is going to be the hardest one to do it for because... And I can say this now because these shows are done. In past years, it's been fairly obvious to me when I've looked at the hour, I've went, right, well, that's very much a fringy 10-minute bit. There's a lighting change.
Yeah.
And then, but this year is kind of, I think, 50 minutes of club set, funny weekend stuff. And then the final 5-10 is nice. And there's a conclusion and there's a message. But every other year, it's been obvious going, right, well, that's the 20 that's clubby because everything else around it is very Edinburgh arts festive. But this year is the hardest, I think, I'm going to have with, well, I want it all in the 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I think this year's show is, and I mean, this is what I have to say, that I do genuinely think it is my best.
And you are at the stand.
I am. I dream that, like... From your first gig at Red Raw doing 5 minutes and you're in this perfect purpose-built room, you do just go, imagine you did your Fringe show in here. Imagine you got an hour in this. And then, so this year I finally get to do that and it is nothing short of a joy. It's amazing.
And it does feel like there is a little community of comedians who, once they've got their commitment from the stand to give them an hour in August, I'm going to hang on to that.
Exactly. I was speaking to my agent about this last night. I was like, if we get offered 420, get grab.
Yeah.
Because initially when they were like 420, I was like, oh, my shows have been at like seven, half six, seven before. 420 does seem a bit early. Day one, I was like, I'll have this forever. I will have this forever. Please, never put this down. And I think that's two-way street. And I think it goes to show how great the stand are to work with, that the acts are loyal and the stand are loyal.
Yeah.
So if you're in and you like it and we all look after each other, it takes a lot for someone to leave the stand, really.
If we quickly move on to future, we've kind of already alluded to the fact that you're hoping that you can find a way to take elements of this show and do it in the club sets, but is there a plan to tour the full hour?
I would love to. And it's something, again, I have spoken to my agent about. We just don't know when to do that jump because... You know, I think I could do maybe about 50, 60 seaters, 10 dates around the UK. No, like, let's not be going crazy for 75 dates. I'm not going to shift them in like Mansfield or whatever, right? But it would be, I think it's the next thing that I haven't done that I would like to tick off.
Yeah.
And so far this year's show is going well. Who knows? This might be the one that gets that across the line. But that would be the inevitable goal. And I think that's the logical next step. Even if it's just like a tour of Scotland, even like a softer landing of going, right, we'll do all the weird towns around Aberdeen, like Ellen, and we'll come down and do like Falkirk or whatever. Like,
And 2012, did you say you've been?
2012 was,
And then 2016, 2017 with full shows. So only a global pandemic stopped you from performing. And you're thinking, for the foreseeable future, there will always be August.
I can't envision a world where, I mean, if you ask me in a week, I'll say, not doing it next year, Chris, mate. Nah, I don't see myself doing it.
But by the end of week three, Walter, back on the high.
The next day, the Fringe is finished, I go, I really wish I was going in to do my show. No, I think it's a pretty safe bet that, again, unless a global pandemic... It has to be world scary.
By next year, the only thing filming your AI.
Yes, and a health organization tells me no. Unless that happens, I'll be here, I think. Yeah, for sure.
So let's do the listings for this year's show.
Okay.
So name, venue, I've already gone through already, but recaps.
Well, absolutely. You never hurts to say it too much. The show is called Gareth Much Means Well. It's at 4:20 in the afternoon at the Stand Comedy Club every single day till the 31st. I'm even doing that last Monday.
Doing that.
Like a madman. Every day apart from the 17th. And please do come and see it. If you're listening to this, please come and see it. I guarantee you, you will have a nice, funny time.
And finally, where do people find you online?
Gareth Much on everything. Instagram. I still have X, and you know, Twitter. Well, Twitter once was. I don't even really open it anymore. I hate that app. So if don't follow me on there. But Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, just Gareth Much. MUTCH.
Yeah,
rogue little T in there.
Get the spelling right.
Yes. Unlike the Shakespeare, yes,
they can't spell the word much. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.